Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that will help us grow. For our first episode, we have Phil joining us. And Phil had a pretty surreal encounter. He actually witnessed two UFOs essentially in combat, with it resulting with one of the crafts actually crashing to Earth. Okay, let's get into it. I want to welcome Phil to the show. Phil, thanks for coming on.
Oh, that's no trouble at all. I have a very interesting experience, and I think I ought to share it with some people.
We were speaking a little bit briefly before this, but I know you had an incredible encounter back in 1980. And if you could, would you mind taking us back to the very beginning of your encounter?
Yes, look, I will. The event did begin in 1980. Look, approximately what we saw was two objects involved in a chase, and in the end, one of those objects ended up crashing into a tree. My brother and I witnessed the chase leading up to the crash, and another person witnessed the crash itself. And he actually was the one who reported it to the newspaper at the time. And you could Google, or anybody who wants to, interested can Google his version of the events. So what my brother and I saw, we were back in February 1980, we were only 10 years old back then, and we'd just gone to bed, and he called out to me and said, "Phil, come and check this out." So I ran into his room to see what had caught his attention. Now, our house was perched on the side of a valley looking up towards the Stirling Township. At the end of the valley, there was a line of trees that sort of formed the skyline. And just above the skyline was a yellow object. This object was sort of hovering around with a slight wobble, and then it would dart this way and that and then resume its hover. It was not behaving like any ordinary aircraft, and nor was it making any noise. So we could hear traffic usually winding its way up the valley, and so we knew what the sounds normally sound like from objects or from machinery operating at the end of the valley. And this was not making any noise. It was dead silent. It was a beautiful, clear summer's night. So no noise, no wind. And so we watched this object, and it seemed to have a purpose. I'll describe it as where we believed it was above, somewhere around the Stirling Woodyard, doing something. And we watched this for several minutes, and then a second object came down. And the first one was yellow. The second object was a red colour. And that one came down, and it approached the yellow object, and then it reversed up. And then it approached the yellow object again, as if it was trying to prompt a reaction. And it got a reaction. The yellow one took off at lightning speed, and the red one was in close pursuit. Now, these objects did not behave like any conventional aircraft. I suppose they were, just to give you some idea on the sort of distances, they were probably 600, 700, maybe 800 metres from where we were. Their apparent size was a little bit larger than Venus and very bright. So they were very distinct objects in the sky. Where was I? Now, so they zoomed around. These objects zoomed around for several minutes like blowflies on steroids chasing each other. A couple of interesting things happened. Every now and again, the yellow object, the one being chased, would sort of get stuck mid-flight, and it would shake back and forth as if it was sort of caught by some invisible force. And then the chase would resume. And these objects would accelerate from naught to, you know, hundreds if not thousands of kilometres an hour instantaneously, and the turns themselves were also instant. So there appeared to be no inertia. It was like watching ping pong balls bounce off the bat, just immediate turns and immediate accelerations. So there's no there's nothing within the human inventory that even reflects what these things could do. We even had time at some point to run into my parents' bedroom and try to get them to come and watch this event, and they didn't. They told us to go back to bed. They probably thought we were making it up or something along those lines. So we came back and resumed watching the spectacle of these objects chasing each other above the tree line on our horizon. And eventually, the yellow object sort of had enough of this, and it took off to our right, sort of at lightning speed. It was almost a blink of an eye, and disappeared behind the hill, which was sort of to our right. We looked around for the red object. We couldn't see the red object either. So we're not sure quite whether it followed or whether the red object simply disappeared. But all up, the encounter lasted probably around 15 minutes. My brother and I hung around for several minutes longer, probably even an hour longer, hoping that they would return, but nothing came back, and that was the end of the show, and I ended up going back to bed. So this is sort of not like a movie where a camera follows these events to give you a seamless story that you can understand. It's more like a detective story. So we didn't know that there had been a crash or anything like that. That simply disappeared. But 2 days later, we went down to visit our grandmother. And our grandmother, the first thing she did was pull out a clipping from the newspaper. And the newspaper had described what was called a UFO crash in Stirling on the same night and approximately the same time, being around 9:45, 10 o'clock, on the same night that we'd seen this. So my brother and I, our credibility was restored instantly when my grandmother presented this paper, and our parents sort of wished they'd got out of bed and joined the witness box when requested by us. But that sort of proved to my brother and I that what we'd seen was something very valid. Now, I'll give you a quick description of Daryl's story, the story that appeared in the paper.
Yeah, that would be great if you could do that.
So Daryl, what he described is hearing a loud crash and running outside to see what had happened. When he got outside, he couldn't see anything, but he could hear some loud creaking coming from around the back of his house. So he ran around the back with a flashlight, and he could hear this noise coming from the top of the tree, and he shone the light in the tree, and he saw a yellow, what he described as a speedboat shape or half moon, depending on which paper you read, stuck about 40 metres up. It was a very large pine tree, and it was stuck in the top branches. and there were some branches that had been torn down and broken, and there was damage to the tree. So the dogs that he has were large dogs, and they were terrified. They ran in the house, and he called the police. But by the time the police had arrived, the craft had disappeared. And so the only story that came out was his version plus damage to the tree was the only evidence. And that was Darryl's story.
Did Darren happen to have any description of the size of the craft or anything like that?
Yeah. He described it as a yellow speedboat shape approximately 8 metres in length and about 30 to 40 metres up in the tree is where it was wedged. Now, it had knocked a branch off, which measured around 30 centimetres in diameter. So, and this was all, the people who investigated this put that all in the report. So people can read about this if they choose to Google his version of the events. So my brother and I witnessed the crash witnessed the chase leading up to this crash. Now, we actually, you might think that, oh, that's a life-changing event, but it, you tend to put it in the ghost story and campfire sort of section of your mind. We didn't have a box to put it in, so it was just kind of an interesting sort of phenomena. And it wasn't until, I guess, the release of the internet where I could actually start to research things many, many years later. And I decided that I'd try and find where Darryl lived and perhaps the tree. I knew where I had seen the craft disappear to. We saw it disappear. It followed Gould Road to the end and then vanished. And so I because we never saw any events beyond that, I had assumed that the craft had crashed shortly after disappearing from view. So I sort of made a plot area on the map just north of, you know, where it was last seen from us. And that plus the description given by Darryl, he did name the property that he lived on. So my first call was to drive to the location that I expected and look for the name, but there was no name on any gatepost. So I couldn't find his house from the street. So I simply picked the driveway, which was my best guess, basically. And I drove down the driveway, and of course, in the stonework was the name of the house and the description, and everything matched. So I was able to find the tree, and I was able to find the branch, you know, the damage. I could see the damage in the top of the tree. So it made it sort of crystal clear to me that what my brother and I had witnessed were physical objects. They were beyond any capability of human-made craft, and they were in conflict with each other. This was not a game. It was more like shooing away. It was as if one object was trying to shoo the other object away.
I've never heard of an instance like this ever in my life. It's actually quite unique.
Well, and I've spoken to another chap from the MUFON group, and he's said the same. Now, what I've actually discovered is that it's not so unique. Again, since the internet, I've posted my story and I've also spoken to a number of people, and there's actually, I've probably come across maybe half a dozen similar cases, and including from people who I know, who not the same event, but a separate event, and they don't all result in crashes, of course, but it certainly is very intriguing, and it certainly sort of leads you to questioning, well, what is going on? Because there seems to be two groups here with different agendas, if you want to call it that. But there seems to be conflict because other people have described similar sort of experiences.
Do you think these were craft that were piloted by someone, or do you think they were kind of a bit more of a drone type of operation?
Yeah, I had considered that, and my guess is that they were piloted. The size was certainly large enough for a number of beings to be in there, and the interesting sort of phenomena where the when the red craft approached the yellow one, it didn't have an automated type, I'm going to shoot this thing out of the sky type response. It was, it really tried to prompt a reaction from the yellow one. And so that sort of, that suggests an unautomated type process, something where it's seeing, trying to get something to happen, and it's not just I'm gonna zap this thing and get rid of it.
So what you're saying is you could actually see there was a bit of intelligence behind.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And the way the Red Craft was approaching and kind of trying to antagonize the Yellow Craft.
Certainly. Look, they were most definitely intelligently controlled. And it appears that they were piloted in this process as well. But that's all, it's speculation, of course. But they were definitely intelligently controlled, because one was certainly chasing the other. And there was, they had very high capabilities. One was tailing this other one with enormous accuracy. So it was. There was nothing random about this. It was the process was very, very controlled by whatever was managing it.
Is there any airfields or military bases, anything like that around the Stirling area that could perhaps lead any, I guess, insight onto this experience of yours?
Look, not in the immediate area. There's one several kilometres away north of Adelaide, and again. The military, I have never seen military anything directly over Stirling. The only time would be the Grand Prix, when they had the jets fly over Mount Lofty, is the only military activity I've seen above the hills. But even considering that, the speed of these craft, in fact, I'll give you a description. So there were a couple of landmarks, and of course at 10 years old we didn't discuss any metrics, but later on when I did my trick and whatnot, I tried to recalculate some of the accelerations and velocities, and there were a couple of landmarks where I had witnessed that it travelled between, within a very short time. And so the example that I sort of used was, it went from a stationary position, accelerated and travelled about half a kilometre, and then immediately reversed, all within about half a second. And again, I guess I'll let the people do their own calculations on the accelerations and velocities, but they are in the hundreds of G's and thousands, potentially thousands of kilometres an hour. So that's well beyond the capability of, especially in 1980, of I think any military craft that I know of. Now, I'll mention now that my brother is also, he has his pilot's license, and I used to fly, but I never got my license. So we both have a fair old interest in flying as adults, and even at the air shows that we've been to, nothing comes close to what we saw that night.
From your, I know you were quite a bit of distance away from it, but did you notice that if there was, say, any windows or any markings that you may have been able to recognize on the yellow craft or even the red craft, or is that something that was just a little bit too far away?
Look, yeah, there was the distance. We really couldn't see any detail. We just see two illuminated objects, approximately the same size. And their apparent size was like a bit larger than the brightest you'll see Venus. I'd like to say it was, a percentage of the moon, perhaps, 20% of the moon or something like that. They were very clear, obvious, bright, glowing objects. And another interesting thing that we did notice was Daryl's description of the yellow craft. He didn't describe it as illuminated either. He described it more as a metallic. Well, look, that was the impression he gave in the story. So he had to shine the light on the craft to see it. And again, that's an interesting I mean, the events had to be, it has to be the same event because, of course, it crashed. It crashed where I expected it to be, and there it was. So, you know, again, you can draw a lot of interesting conclusions or make some assumptions anyway, but it appears that the glow stopped when the craft stopped. So that's another interesting little side story to consider.
Yeah, definitely. Now, have you noticed, I guess, an increase of activity since you've had this encounter?
No, look, this was the only encounter that my brother and I have ever experienced. So I've not seen any other UFOs. I've certainly in the last probably in the last 12 months. Now, this is 38 years later, so this all this happened a long time in the past. But I guess, again, since I started investigating other people's stories and myself being able to find similar stories that sort of were so closely, which matched the description of mine so closely, I became sort of blown away at how this was possible and that this was not just a one-off event. And so I've sort of discovered that there are actually many, many events of UFOs, and they all are quite similar. Well, they don't all, but there are many similar descriptions, particularly in the movement, the lack of apparent inertia and how they can accelerate and turn without changing speed. A lot of eyewitnesses describe that sort of movement. And especially the other people who have described chases similar to mine have blown me away, because in some of these circumstances I had not described my chase first, and when somebody else came out with a story that matched mine, I had to listen, of course, because it was just too similar.
Do you think there's two different types of beings going at it?
Yes, I do, and I would have to say there's certainly, I mean, this is where we get into the whole realm of speculation, but I would have to say that from what I've read and from what other people have told me about their own experiences is that there are multiple entities with multiple agendas, and my story was consistent with that. And again, I guess the proof lies within numbers of witnesses rather than any one particular story. Other people have described, well, again, multiple chases, and I have not seen any beings, so I've not seen any, you know, aliens as are described in popular ufology, but there are certainly descriptions of aliens out there.
Did you notice any type of a military presence after the fact of this event within Stirling?
No, there was no activity beyond that. And I did say that my brother and I actually stayed up for quite some time after, waiting to see if these would return. But I'll tell you a story from a woman. Now, I better not give too many details. She contacted me and described a very similar chase with a crash, and it wasn't too far from where I lived back then, but it was a different event. And in that situation, she told me that the military were involved with the cleanup, and that somehow she was connected to this, and they were told to be a bit quiet about it. And that's what she told me. And I'd better not give too much info because I haven't asked her permission to disclose any of this. But that was one of the stories that certainly grabbed my attention, because, again, it was very similar to mine, and it did involve military being involved. The other stories that I've come across which involve chases I'll tell you another one. The chap near our holiday house, he's a neighbour at our holiday house, he came to me once, and we were talking ufology, and I hadn't told him my story, and he volunteered his own, and he had told me that out one night he had seen two craft chasing one, and again the descriptions were quite similar to my own. There was no crash involved, But again, that reinforced my own confidence in that what I had seen and my interpretation of what I had seen was correct.
That's amazing. It seems to be kind of a little bit of a hotspot around that area.
Well, I haven't seen anything else, so I I can't confirm that. Yes. But look, let me give you the details of the newspaper clipping.
Yeah, that would be great if you could shine some light on, well, I guess, what the media was kind of saying about the event.
So this is all reported in the Advertiser, I believe, around the 7th or 8th of February 1980. And so if one was to follow it up, you could Google Darryl Brown Sterling UFO crash 1980, and you might be able to find, I mean, I have personally found his story on a number of websites, and that will confirm, the crash, and it will tie in with what I've just told your listeners today. And there were in total four witnesses of this event: myself, my brother, this chap Darryl, and another man. Now, I won't identify him because he hasn't given me permission to, but there was all up four of us witnessed the chase. Well, three of us witnessed the chase and one of us witnessed the crash. And it was assembling all of that information that makes it so significant.
Look, I'm really interested to touch base with you again on this one, Phil, because it sounds like you're collecting a fair bit of information on it and kind of piecing a few things together. So,
oh well, I have actually contacted his family. Now, Darryl passed away. He passed away just months before I began this investigation, so I wasn't able to find Darryl, which was upsetting. But I found his brother and his sisters and some other members of his family, and they've all confirmed Darryl's story. Although they did not witness the event, they all said that they believed Darryl was telling the truth. They just didn't know what to do with it. So that was, again, and they confirmed a number of other small details which were also quite sort of important in, confirming how real the event is, because you question your own belief system when you recognise that we are probably not alone and that entities are here. So I needed to, for my own personal well-being, I needed to make absolutely sure that my interpretation of what we saw was correct.
It really would kind of make you question a lot of things that you currently know, or things that you think are right and wrong when you get kind of this type of experience happening in your life.
Yes, and that's certainly been the case in the last 12 months when I sort of dragged this event out of my memory and began this process of investigation. It has been a roller coaster ride, and especially finding so many other pieces to this jigsaw puzzle. So I can't call myself a ufologist yet, but I've begun the process of taking this seriously. It's no longer in the campfire and ghost story section of my mind. It's been pulled out to the very forefront of something very important that humanity needs to look into. And I guess through my own experience and my own confirmation, I believe that we need to bring people together who have had similar experiences so that we can work out a bigger picture on what these entities are doing on Earth.
Like I said earlier there, Phil, I'm super interested to see where you kind of get with your investigations and your contacting of other people and in regards to very similar circumstances. So,
well, Gabe, my intention is to contact a number of these other people who have briefly told me their own personal stories with these other chases, and again, also some of Darryl's family have the original articles in the papers and magazines that Darryl spoke about. And I'd like to see if I could get a copy of those as well. So I'd be quite pleased to let you know how I go and if I have any luck finding that information.
Yeah, definitely. That would be absolutely fantastic. We can share it on our social media outlets, put it on our website, and hopefully kind of spread that word out there a little bit for you. And maybe you can touch base with some, I guess, other people who may have witnessed the same event as you, maybe just from a different point of view.
Well, that's true as well, because there may be other witnesses who have not come across at this stage. So, yes. Well, thank you, Kay, for the opportunity to discuss it.
Be sure to keep us updated on any new revelations that you do come across.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Phil, for joining me for this episode. And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.